Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsburg, and I'm here with Tom Gould and Melissa Gould.
And hi, Bob.
Melissa's playing with a new microphone, so bear with us.
Sounding louder than normal.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us tonight, everyone. And we would love to hear from you if you'd like to call in. The number here is 888-627-6008. We will be addressing some of the questions that you have emailed in, but you're certainly welcome to call and ask a question or share something that you'd like to share with us, and we appreciate your calls. Before we get started, I'd like to mention that we do presently have two retreats, both in Florida, that are open for registration. One is in January, which is our regular retreat format. The other one is in April, which is for the first time we've ever done this. We're limiting that retreat to only parents who have lost children. So both are open for registration. You could find all the details and register by visiting foreverfamilyfoundation.org and going to the events page. So we can, we have a list of some questions that people wrote in. And by the way, just by the nature of what we do, and we've been doing it for so long, that we get a lot of duplicate questions. So if you're a longtime listener and you think you've heard that question before, you most probably did.
Can I start with a question, Bob?
Can you start with a question? Absolutely not. Tom, what do you think? Can she start with a question?
Dangerous.
Okay, well, go for it. Go for it.
It's a simple question. And because you talked about the two retreats that are coming up, and that the second one in April is strictly for parents who have lost children. And I know when somebody has lost a spouse, they become a widow or a widower, or a child without a parent is an orphan. So is there another term one can use for an individual who has lost a child?
You know, none that has become part of the vernacular. You know, it just, you know, we commonly refer to them as bereaved parents, you know. But I don't know. You're right. I mean, if somebody says orphan, you definitely know, you know. But I don't think there is a term for it. If you'd like to start one, I'd be happy to use it.
Well, maybe some of our listeners have some suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, if you have lost a child, how would you like to introduce yourself to people when you feel it's necessary?
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to perhaps say, well, I'm a bereaved parent, although that's perfectly fine because that is what you are. But if there was something a little more to the point, like widow or widower or orphan, as we mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that there are terms that people use. I'm just not familiar with them. And while we're on that subject, you could attend any retreat as a bereaved parent because, as you know, I mean, probably 60% of all the attendees at every retreat are bereaved parents. Yeah. It's just that we felt that since there are so many that having, if we started holding retreats that were exclusively, it's just some more camaraderie of being among everybody in the same boat, so to speak. So, you know, I'm sure that will go well. And if it does, we'll just continue that format. So we'll still have four retreats per year, but one we'll dedicate to bereaved parents.
That's wonderful.
So one of the questions that came in is, my 8-month-old daughter passed away. If I get pregnant again, is it possible for her soul to reincarnate back into our family? You know, and I would say yes. There are many, many reports of people reincarnating into the same family. And sometimes, you know, people are under the misconception that many, many, many years elapse before somebody's reincarnated. But I think I read in one of the research reports that the average amount of time is something like 16 months, you know, before somebody passes and then reincarnates again. So, yeah, and I'm sure you guys have heard reports from people wondering if one of their children could be the reincarnation of another child that was lost, right? You've heard that?
Sure.
There are definitely things that they notice about the child. Now, it's hard to say because in families, people often do have similar
right.
characteristics. But
right.
It's a lovely thought, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you know, how could you really tell, right? Well, as you said, but yeah, so absolutely, I think that that's possible. You know, and then I just think, I mean, if you did pass and you wanted to come back, and there's two schools of thought. One, in a logical sense, you'd say, yeah, I want to come back to the same family. But, you know, as Tom has often explained, you know, sometimes, you know, you're part of a greater soul and you're coming back for a reason. So maybe that reason can't be fulfilled. You know, you can't learn the same lesson, so to speak, if you come back to the same family. So you come back to somebody totally different. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, Tom, you want to chime in on that?
Well, what you guys both came up with make a lot of sense. And yes, I do think that it's possible for a soul to come back into the same family. You know, most of the stories we hear are souls that go into new families, but they remember their old families. I'm not sure I've read any that come back as the same. And it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
What comes to mind for me is I referred to it, I believe, on our last radio show, that the book our certified medium, Connie Fusella, has written, is about to come out, talks about the tragic loss of people at a very, very young age. And it's such a hard concept to understand that you may have been born with a soul contract to only live a certain amount of time and to be on this earth only a certain amount of time. And as hard as that is to accept that that could be possibly true, if it were true and you were only meant to be here for a short while, presuming you have lessons to learn or something others need to learn from you, it may not necessarily make sense that they would then return to the same family, because they already had that opportunity with those individuals, and now perhaps what their journey will entail will be coming into contact with other individuals. But that's just a theory. I have nothing, you know, nothing in writing to support that other than what notion Connie had me thinking about. So
right.
It's just a possibility, I suppose.
Okay. Before we go on, let's take a call. We have Irving from California. Hello, Irving, are you there?
I'm right here.
No, good. Welcome to the show. I believe you had a question about determining when somebody is going to move on to the next life.
Correct.
So when you say that, you're talking about, you know, knowing when you're going to pass?
Correct, yes. I'm going to be 95, October 7th, in another month. And so I'm getting up there. And I was wondering, is there any way, I know that in terms of the Hall of Records in the afterlife, there are dates that people know when I'm going to be passing on to the afterlife. So I know the date is out there, supposedly, although it can be changed. Is there any way that I can know if I contact with somebody in the afterlife or a medium, is some way of finding out what date would that would be?
Yeah, I don't think so, you know, Irving. I think that I've never heard of a medium given that information. I don't know that, you know, there are so many free will decisions in this world that I don't think that anything is etched in stone. I know that, which is totally unrelated, but, you know, we know when people are in the dying process because very often they sort of straddle two worlds, and they're in a lot of cases they're seeing deceased people that went before them.
Yeah, I haven't got to the level yet.
Yeah, I know. But no, I don't think that there's anything in the Akashic records or that, you know, that have a date. Now, I mean, a lot of people believe that some people are put upon this earth for a certain amount of time, and maybe when they came back, for instance, maybe they knew that their life was going to be short, but not specific enough, you know, to give them a specific date. You know what, Irving, I had an uncle of mine that he lived to 101, and when he was around your age, somebody asked him, you know, like, what's his secret, you know, to longevity? And he said, it's simple. He says, I just don't know how to die. You know, so, yeah, I don't know. But let me ask you this. Would you want to know?
Yeah, that's the reason I'm asking the question, is because then I can make some plans. Right now, for example, I'm in the process of thinking when to write my book, which includes some important information for people on Earth. And do I have some time? Do I need to do it very quickly? Do I have a lot of time? Will I live to 101 or what?
Yeah.
So that's why I was hoping that maybe I could find out, but maybe, as you indicated, there doesn't seem to be. I know, it seems to me, my understanding of how it all works is that there are people in the afterlife who can go to the Hall of Records and find out when I'm coming there so they can be there for me. Do you know anything about that?
Well, no, but it just, you know, and then, but it's an interesting question, but it seems that those on the other side know, I can't tell you how they know, but they know when you're crossing, and they are there to greet you. You know, it's some sort of a connectivity based on energy or frequency or love or family bond, but they know, you know, and we know that because
knowing. If I understand correctly, is that it's already, you can go to, you know, all the records are all Hall of Records and so forth, and that because there's a lot of people that will be there, my understanding, it's not one or two people, I could have a lot of people there ready to greet me, which I hope I do, okay?
Well,
so apparently it's out there somewhere. How will they all know at the same time or so on? So it seems to be out there somewhere, but maybe some way of contacting somebody who would know. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard of that specifically. I don't know that it's possible, but and it's a reasonable question, like how they know, but it just seems that they do gather with you to help escort them you to the other side, but I have no idea really how they know that. But Irving, I hope you do live to 110.
I have
So
another question, if I can just quickly.
yeah.
I really would like to get a good medium. I know that Olson has a book about mediums. I live in San Francisco area in a place called Novato. You got any hints or anything, any suggestions about finding a good
Well,
medium?
we've been evaluating mediums since 2005. So if you go on our website, which is foreverfamilyfoundation.org, we have a section of certified mediums that we've evaluated, and all
Forever
their contact
medium.
forever, like the word forever, familyfoundation.org.
My forever family foundation
Dot
dot
org.
org. Okay, well, thank you
Okay.
very
Well,
much.
thanks for calling, Irvin.
Yeah, and if you get a
All right.
medium who does tell you this, we'd love to hear the what you find out.
And my advice, Irving, is start writing that book because 95 years, you have a lot to say. And I want you to get it all out before time goes by. So please start your book now.
Yeah, my father's 97 and he says he doesn't buy any green bananas.
Yeah,
Right, take care. All right, so let's see. We have a when spirits help those who are grieving, and there are so many ways they help us, does doing so help their own souls to grow and evolve? Is that part of a learning accomplished on the other side? And does it seem like some spirits are more advanced than others at sending signs and setting up synchronicities?
yes and yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have three yeses there, right? I mean, I think we do believe that we help them evolve, just by the very fact that they're helping us, it sort of completes the, their mission. And it appears that there are some people on the other side that that's their job, is just to help people on this side. And, we also believed, based on everything we've learned, is that there's constant learning on the other side and there's constant advancement. And yeah, so some people, I mean, a lot of mediums will talk about different levels or spheres in the, in the next worlds. And each particular sphere or dimension has a different frequency and vibration. And some spirits are at a much higher level than others. And that may explain why we don't hear from them as much, because it's really hard to match frequencies, then. But, and it does appear that some people in spirit are, I don't know if they're more advanced, but they're better able to send signs and synchronicities than others, right? You agree with that?
Yes.
We see that a lot, it seems, especially when we're in the group readings that happen during our retreats. And yeah, people verify that was their
And
personality or.
also some sitters, some people that are getting the communications seem to get more communications than others, right? We see that all the time, like at the retreats. They'll go from medium to medium. The medium doesn't know who got read and who didn't when they go to a different group. And yet the same people get read by all four mediums, while others don't get read at all. I
Much
never
to their
could figure
dismay. It's
that. As well.
difficult sometimes for our other attendees, but we always hope that they'll pay attention because there's often a message for them in that other person's reading. Because we feel sometimes that our retreats, we all happened to have chosen that retreat to be at, possibly orchestrated by our loved ones on the other side, and that maybe they are all part of a similar soul group and can share similar information that can resonate with us.
And I'd also like to address the point that was made of asking whether them spirit helping us helps them. And I would say that we have found that the coin of the realm on the other side is love and compassion. So when you reach out to help someone, whether it's in your own realm or in the physical realm, you're showing compassion, and that compassion is money in the bank for you as far as your spiritual growth. Because we've also know that money is meaningless on the other side. So it's how much you love, how much you love, how much you are loved, and the level of your compassion are what's going to bring you to your growth as a spirit.
You know what? You're also reminding me, Tom, the other things that don't matter on the other side. I have never heard a medium bring through anything about politics or religion. And aren't those the biggest causes of wars and upset in our daily lives?
Absolutely.
And it's meaningless, meaningless on the other side.
Okay, this listener writes, I have two questions. I've recently visited a medium after the death of my parents. He told me I'm paranormally gifted. I think I've always felt this way. I want to learn more and better this gift. What can I do to further develop this gift? I guess before we answer that, let me say that we've noticed over the years that in a great many readings, the medium tells the sitter that they have a gift, you know. So it's not a criticism. I'm just saying that it's an observation. So sometimes it's true, and sometimes I question whether they're just saying that because that's what the person, you know, wants to hear. But if you've always felt that way and you want to learn more, you know, there are mediums, even some of our certified mediums offer mediumship development courses, and you can check their websites and perhaps, you know, enroll in one. There's also many gifts. There's many books that have been written on the subject, and we have a recommended reading list on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and it's by category, so you could look up some of the books about mediumship, and that may give you a good idea as well.
I think it's all right to mention that The Journey Within in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, a number of our certified mediums are affiliated with The Journey Within, and the current pastor is our certified medium, Joseph Scheel. And I know that they offer courses for development.
And her other question is about clearing your head. How do you clear your head? I can't get my thoughts quiet, and it really bothers me.
Well, the key to that is meditation. And I know that just saying that is pretty easy, but doing it is often hard, especially if you've got a mind like mine that's fully chattering it all the time. So my suggestion on that is, if traditional, you know, when you think of meditating, you think of sitting in a room with incense and soft music and your legs crossed and sitting there and breathing, and you sit there, and then 30 seconds later, you're wondering, oh gosh, I have an email I got to write, or I have a meeting next week I got to prepare for. And all of a sudden, the chatter starts. And it's a matter of shutting that chatter down is where the real benefit comes. The primary recommendation on that is, when you sit to meditate, you breathe in, you breathe out, and you concentrate on that. And then if all of a sudden you find yourself thinking other thoughts, you go, oh, wait a minute, and you start thinking about your breathing again. So bring it back to the breathing, get it back to the breathing. That's one way. Also, there are other ways to meditate. If you're into sports, if you like running or exercising, you can get yourself, you've heard about an athlete that gets into the zone. Well, they're meditating. When they're in the zone, they're meditating and they play better, and it increases their talents because they're getting their ego out of the way and feeding off of the energy of the universe that's flowing through them. So that's a way. Dancing is another way. Listening to music, playing music, singing music. Those are all ways to meditate, or just sitting and staring at a fire. If you have a fire pit or something like that, speaking of Joe Scheel, he talks about what's called scrying, where you pick something like a fire or a lake or a waterfall, and you just stare at that. And that can help also to clear your mind. Being out in nature is another one. And go into the woods, stand in amongst the trees and take it in. So yeah, it's not easy. It takes a lot of practice, but that is how you can do it. I think the main thing, we took a course at the Omega Institute where we talked about deep meditation, and I had that question. I raised my hand and said, well, you know, I'm in the middle of the meditation and I'm thinking about other things. What do I do? And they said, that's fine. It's going to come in. Things are going to come into your mind. And it's not that you keep them away. It's that you recognize that that's not what you're doing right now. And instead of entertaining the thoughts that come into your mind, put them aside. And as I say, concentrate back on the breathing. But meditation is the way where you can clear your mind. And so my 2-minute tutorial on meditation is not enough to get you there. But the fact that I'm saying meditation, find out about what works for you in the different ways that you can meditate.
Yeah, and that's all good advice. I mean, the other thing that I would say is, if you truly are gifted mediumistically, you're gonna hear voices and thoughts in your head, and it's common for new mediums to learn how to sort that all out. You know, and I'm not sure if that's what you meant by getting your thoughts quiet, and seasoned mediums are able to kind of shut down, you know, and shut down to the outside spirit, you know, voices. And that's where, again, getting some tutoring from a seasoned medium can help. Let's see, another question. My question relates to the belief, as I have been told by multiple mediums, that at the time of transition, our soul immediately goes to heaven. If that is true and souls do not get stuck here, is there an explanation for hauntings as portrayed on paranormal TV shows of places and or people? There seems to be a disconnect here for me. We are either in heaven or are we stuck here until someone helps us find the light? Could you please help me reconcile this? Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
First, I would say that almost uniformly, all of the mediums say that we're not stuck. You know, they say that, like, we're never stuck. You know, there's, you know, we're in this place that we go after physical death. Some you might say heaven. The other consensus is that we go where we belong, you know, based upon the life that we lived here. You know, some might call it heaven. And regarding, so it's not like the soul immediately goes to heaven. It goes to the next, to another dimension, which could be different dimensions of different frequency. We're among like-minded people, which is an incentive to sort of be good on this side. It's self-judgment. We're not sent there. We place ourselves there based upon where we belong. I wouldn't go by those paranormal TV shows. I think that it may be true that people that had certain obsessions or habits in this earthly life, at least initially when they cross over, that they might, I don't know what to call it, attach themselves to people. For instance, if, let's say that you really like to smoke, you know, when you were living here, and you know, and now you're still the same person that you were initially. So you crave this, even though you don't have a body, you crave the sensation of smoking. So you might go to a friend or somebody and sort of vicariously smoke through them. I don't think that you're haunting them. It's just, you know, a desire to, you know, to be close. And many of the things, like Lloyd Auerbach would explain a haunting as place memory. Mm-hmm. So energy is imprinted on a physical place like a house or a room, but it's not a conscious entity. It's just energy that you're picking up. Whereas an apparition, which what we call a ghost, is a conscious entity. It's a visitation by somebody in the next world. So I don't know whether that answers the question. What do you guys want to add something to
your tentacle theory, Tom?
Yeah, well, not really, but I mean, when you see there's a famous story of a woman who's sitting on a rocking chair on a balcony, and she walks across the balcony and walks back to the chair, and people call Ghostbusters and say, hey, you know, that guy, my house is haunted because this woman keeps walking back and forth. And that's what Bob was referring to as a energy imprint, that the person is not there. It's just that their energy, the memory of their energy is there. And as Bob says, it's something that probably for years this woman did this while she was alive, and now you see the energy trail of her continuing to do that. And also what Bob said, and I have to strongly recommend, Lloyd Auerbach has written several books, and he deals with the different kinds of sightings, whether they be the energy imprint, whether they be poltergeist, or an actual apparition. So I would look up the books of Lloyd Auerbach, which I'm sure are on our website, and that's a tremendous way to go. In fact, I can mention that Lloyd found out by when he was being interviewed on The View one day, that Whoopi Goldberg, during one of the commercial breaks, turned to him and said, I've got to thank you for my Oscar. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, she won an Oscar for playing a psychic in the movie Ghost. And she told Lloyd that the guy who wrote the movie Ghost was inspired by Lloyd's book to write that movie. And I also think that the movie Ghost is very... it rings true as to what a lot of this afterlife is all about.
Mm-hmm. You're going to think I made up this question, but I didn't. It just came in on my phone. But I only say that because it mentions golf, and I'm always playing golf. Do our loved ones on the other side have jobs similar to the jobs they had on Earth? Can they play golf? So, of course, this is all speculation based upon what we've read, but all of these channeled reports, mostly from, you know, long ago, talk about exactly that we do have jobs and everybody has a role. And as far as playing golf, we're entities of thought and energy, and we could manifest anything that we want. So we can manifest the home that we lived in, and we can and people talk of libraries, you know, places of learning. And if they want to play golf, they manifest, you know, a golf course and play golf. So,
but if you hate golf, you're not forced to play golf, correct?
No, no, I guess that would be considered hell, right? To some people, it would. But yeah, I mean, it's so hard for us. But I think that, yeah, I mean, there are some people, we talked about this earlier, that their job might be, you know, assisting people, you know, in grief, or their job might be helping a child that crossed over, you know, to fulfill their, you know, growth. So I think we do take on different roles. You know, maybe somebody that was a brilliant surgeon in this life and passes over, maybe his job is to inspire others, you know, to convey what he knows about, you know, surgery. So
that reminds me of one of my favorite stories, which I've told many times, but it's a good spot for it again, is Melissa was getting a reading from a medium, and my father came through with a tremendous reading. When the energy was subsiding, he said, "You see that guy out there on that jet ski? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to ride that jet ski. I can ride with him all day long and he will never even know I'm there."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can still have fun on the other side, mm-hmm. apparently.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
There's another one that just came in here. just mentions that the work that we do, my son died in a car accident. I have mediums and other spiritual friends say it was his time. Other times I'm told that humans have control over fate through choice. These seem contradictory to me. Which is it? This is from Julie. Julie, I can certainly relate to your question. You know, I also... you know, lost a child in a car accident. And this is something that I battled with, you know, for many, many years. I used to get very angry when people would come up to me and say that it was, you know, her time, you know, and I was like, really? You know, I mean, I just, you know, I couldn't really, you know, grasp that. I think I know in my daughter's case, I know that she had some sort of inner knowledge that her life was going to be short, which leads me to believe that there was some plan, you know, that she would, you know, that she wasn't going to live a long life. That's why she tried to cram everything in, you know, as much as she could in the time that she had. But also in your question, even if that's true, this free will here and this free will there, and there are so many little decisions that can affect that outcome, you know, so that's certainly not etched in stone. So I think it's sort of a combination of both, you know, there may be a plan, but there are so many things that can affect that plan.
Yeah.
Right.
And, but the initial question is, well, if you have choice, you know, could you choose not to have the accident? Well, the choice that you have starts before you even get here. There's apparently, you kind of alluded to a soul contract that before you come to the earth, you kind of figure out, all right, I'm going to the earth. I'm going to do this. And they say, well, you know, you want to do this and this and this. And you're only going to be here for 15 years. So are you okay with that soul contract? And you say, yes, I want to do it that way. And so you come having made the choice that you're going to leave early. It's horrible for the people around you who love you and that sort of thing, but that was your choice. And it, like Bob says, you know, you want to bash somebody over the head for even suggesting something like that, because you know, who would choose that? And as Bob mentioned, and I've read Bailey's book, there, a lot of her writing is prophetic. And it's, as Bob said, she kind of knew that was her time.
We hear those stories too from our friend Dave Kane and his son, Nick. So it's, yeah. You know, there's a lot of evidence pointing in that direction.
Yeah. I have another question here. I'm seeking advice regarding the best practices for mediums to stay connected, even when they aren't professionally reading. I have found that since I stopped giving readings a couple of years ago, now they are mostly scattered throughout the year, and I feel so disconnected from my spirituality and myself. What is the best way to still feel community with spirit when you're not professionally active in mediumship? You know, I'm a bit, you know, a little bit conflicted on that, because you could have the gift of mediumship and not be a professional medium. Yeah. I mean, you could be a personal communicator and communicate with spirit on your own. So I don't know whether the designation of being, you know, of doing it professionally matters. Then there's the other issue is, if you're not doing it often, I mean, do you need practice to do it? You know, do you become rusty in mediumship?
Probably. I would say yes. You know, anything that you do, you have to keep doing it to stay proficient at it. My recommendation here is the mediums, all the mediums I've seen and talked to, talk about having spirit guides who help them. And if you're not reading a sitter, then communicate with your spirit guide and ask, you know, and keep your acumen up by that. And you get the added benefit that your spirit guide is going to guide you mm-hmm. to where maybe you should be doing more readings, or maybe you should be doing something else, or that. But I guess the spirit guide is where I would put my energies.
Yeah.
Good point.
Well, a question, is anyone talking about how to document occurrences? In other words, how to keep a lab notebook, a database of experiences? There are some, although we have never done it, I mean, there are some organizations that they do just that. I mean, if you, I can't tell you specifically, but if you Google, you know, database of after-death communications, you'll see some organizations. Of course, it's limited in scope. I often think about that, because think about how many things have been reported to us over the last 20 years. I mean, there have to be thousands of reports, and I guess it would have been valuable if we had put them all into a central database. Of course, we're limited as an all-volunteer, you know, organization to have the manpower to do that. But, you know, and there also been, you know, many, many books, you know, written about, you know, after-death communications, you know, for over the past, you know, 100 years. But that, of course, they're talking of listing, you know, 15 or 20 different, you know, types of stories. But, yeah, there are some organizations that do it. I wish that we had done it, but I think it is valuable, because the more data you have, you know, the more acceptable it'll be to the mainstream.
But we do encourage, in fact, at each of our grief retreats, we always give out a journal at the beginning of the weekend, and we encourage people to write down if they get a sign or something happening paranormal, because a lot of times you see something and you go, gee, that is that a sign, or is it's just coincidence, and you dismiss it and move on. But if you keep a journal and say, well, today I found a dime in an unusual place, or this bird came and just sat there on my windowsill, and if you write them down in a journal and then go back months or a year later and see how many of these you actually wrote down, you start to see patterns, and then you get confident that what you are experiencing is a connection.
Here's a question. Can mediums pick up information from your past life? We've talked about that a bit, and you know, in prior shows, Because that always made sense to me. If we're a combination, an accumulation of all of our lives, then a medium should be able to, you know, do that. I was interviewing John Holland last week, and he kind of alluded to that as well, that he says, yeah, you know, you can, and he has, but none of it can be verified. So, like, you know, what's the, you know, because you don't, most people don't remember except when they're a child, details about their past life. So if he picks up something, it's kind of useless because you can't, you don't know whether it's he's right or he's wrong.
I know our son had the experience. I had introduced him to a medium, and he and his wife went for a reading, mostly out of curiosity. And the things she you know, only knew him as my son, nothing more about him. But as she read him, she brought up a previous profession he had had in another lifetime, and the attributes of that, I don't know if you would express it like that, the attributes of that profession definitely related to the demeanor of our son now and how he approaches things and how he leads his life now. Definitely that connection made a lot of sense. I don't know if that was her typical style of doing a reading or not. Actually, now that I come to think about it, we both had met this person at one time, Bob, and she was a psychic. So now that she was doing mediumistic readings, maybe but that's true. The psychic isn't anything about past life. It's just picking up on somebody's energy. So I guess I'm not answering that question very well, but it made sense to him in that moment that if this were indeed a past life of his, it explained parts of his personality now.
All right. So we had somebody just called in with a question, a two-part question. When transitioning into the afterlife, does a person gain knowledge on subjects they didn't know about when they were human? Does that knowledge affect that person's opinion and feelings? And everyone comes in with soul contracts. What happens when you don't fulfill those soul contracts? Well, for that part, I guess you do it again, right? You know, if you don't fulfill it, your kind of oversoul knows that, and you know, you have another go around. But what do you think about, you know, the people gaining knowledge on subjects they didn't know about when they were human?
Well, one thing I will talk about is people who, and we get this a lot in readings, of people who were not nice people when they were here, and when they pass, they want to come back right away through a medium and communicate to the people that they harmed and apologize. So there's instance right away that they learned when they went across the bad stuff they were doing was bad. So they learned that, you know, if you want to take the question another way and say, well, now I can do math when I couldn't do math before. I don't know about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that in that example, that definitely would affect their opinions and feelings, right? Because that, you know, they learned. I don't think, at least initially, that we have this access to vast knowledge. You know, we don't know everything just because we died physically. I think we learn there, but we learn at a much faster pace than we, you know, in this dense environment. As far as opinions and feelings, you know, that's kind of a human term. You know, I don't know whether opinions and feelings are applicable to, you know, in the next realm. We think of feelings, whether, you know, we hate someone, we like someone, we're jealous of someone. But, you know, as Tom alluded to earlier, the thing that gets shed right away in this next realm is ego, and you're this entity of thought, and everybody communicates telepathically, so there's no incentive to hide anything, because there's no power, there's no greed, there's no ego. What are you hiding? There's no material possessions, there's no currency. You know, and Tom mentioned it, you know, the currency is love and compassion. So, you know, I know what they're driving at, opinions and feelings, but it's different than opinions and feelings here.
Yeah. I'm kind of sorry about that now, because when my mom, in her later years, wanted to share things with me, and I said, shh, I don't want anyone to overhear this, Mom. Wait till you're on the other side, and then you'll have the full picture. But don't talk about it now. maybe she did, and maybe she just wasn't interested any longer.
Well, maybe she got there and said, well, Melissa told me that I was going to get the full picture. Where is that full picture?
Whoops.
Yeah. We had another question. How do mediums feel about religion? Well, I think that's very much like we feel about religion. Yeah. You know, some of them have strong religious convictions, which is some people may find odd, you know, because a lot of religions frown upon the work that they do. You know, that you're not supposed to, you know, communicate with the dead. But I've noticed quite a number of mediums that say a prayer, you know, before a reading, or, you know, or ask their guides, or even ask God, you know, to help them, you know, with the information. I used to think that they do said the prayer before, you know, cynical me, you know, to try to protect themselves because they feel guilty about violating, you know, the religion. But no, I think a lot of mediums are, which is also, there are some mediums that think purely in a spiritual sense, you know, so they don't subscribe to any organized religion per se. But they believe in a God or a grand organizer, and so their prayers may not be directed to a specific God, but just a general, you know, deity. So I think they're very much like the rest of us. You know, they some are religious and some are not.
Also, I've found that spirit, when they communicate, they like to present themselves, well, first of all, in a way that you will recognize them, and then secondly, in a way that they would like to be remembered. My mom had a vision of my dad where he was much younger and smiling and that sort of thing. And so I think depending on your belief system will be how you get your information from the other side. I bring this up because many accounts of near-death experiences, people who are clinically dead, and yet their consciousness leaves their body, and if they're in an operating room, they can see what's going on, and they can hear the doctors talking to each other, and then when they are revived and brought back to this plane, they can recount these things. And a lot of many of them will say, well, I got over there and I saw the bright light and I met Jesus. So, and he told me it wasn't my time and sent me back. And so if you spend your life in a religious feeling where Jesus is the center of your life, then spirit is going to present itself in what is comforting to you. And if you are comforted by Jesus or any other Buddha or whatever, that's what you will see. And
yeah.
I personally think faith is a great thing to have, whether you have faith in the afterlife period, or if you have faith in that there is a God looking over you, that's healthy and important. It's when it starts to get into dogma and that where humans try to use your faith to influence you, that's when it gets to be dangerous.
Right. That's why I would say spirituality is religion without the rules, right? So, you know, I agree with all that. All right, well, it's we only had a minute left, so we can't really get into another question, but let me read the Claude Swanson's Global Peace Prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to a fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Good
Bye.
night.